so hard to not abuse animals.
Carnies can fuck themselves. Go fuck themselves.
This is a shout out for vegans.
Good morning, vegans.
This is a shout out for vegans.
Welcome to the pre-shift. Good morning, vegan ears, and welcome to the Vegan Pre-Shift. I'm Jess McKay. It is Friday, November 24th, 2023, and we are very happy to see you today. Now, I know our little thing up top says it's the 23rd, but you know what? Accidents happen. We accidentally put the wrong date, and you know what? You are living in the future, or the present, or whatever we're doing in the moment. Today, we have a very special guest joining us. Their name is Scott Seven. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. I guess Scott will come and tell us in a moment. But we're very happy to have Scott on. They are a wonderful organizer of some cool events here in Los Angeles. And I'm really excited to hear what they have to tell us about what's going on. Now, I hope everybody had a wonderful Thanksgiving yesterday. Thanksgiving, however you want to celebrate that. Again, I'm going to reiterate on this channel, we do not support colonialism or genocide or any of that stuff. But we did grow up in a society where we have a harvest day where we all get together and be thankful. And that's what Thanksgiving means for me and my group. We just get together. We are with friends. We eat wonderful, lovely vegan food. And we become grateful for the things that we are grateful for. I say we become grateful. We're actually already grateful for these things. And I think the practice of gratitude is something that can help you throughout your entire year, because if you're feeling down about life, you know, oftentimes reflecting on those things that you do have to be thankful for can help you to feel better about the world. Because, you know, even if you're in a terrible situation, I'm sure that there's little glimmers of hope from places. Speaking of being in a terrible situation and having glimmers of hope, I wanted to share with you a thought that I had, an experience that I had a couple days ago. Now, I'm going to lift her up. I'm going to exploit an animal for entertainment right here. This is Faye. As you can see, she is comfortably laying on my lap, and that was her being like, what the heck are we doing? But I promise you, this is where she wants to be right now. I was setting up the broadcast for a minute. As you can see, Faye is a little puppy. She's a dog. She sleeps in our bedroom next to the bed. And every once in a while, this lovely little creature here has nightmares. She has dreams. And so I'll be asleep or about to fall asleep in the middle of the night, and I'll hear, and the funny thing is, she never really barks in a waking life. But when she's dreaming, she's a barker. And sometimes you can feel that she's feeling, you know, stressed out. Sometimes you can feel that she's feeling, you know, happy in her dreams. But if she is feeling stressed out, what I like to do is sort of give her a little pet, wake her up. You know, my wife does the same thing for me when I'm feeling stressed in my nightmares. I always say, you saved me. And so what we do is we save Faye. Now, we understand that the dogs like Faye here are sentient beings. They are individuals with thoughts, feelings, desires. She's even having a dream. So what that tells me is she's got a whole inner life going on that we aren't necessarily privy to all the time, but it's happening. And I had this question, and maybe y'all can help me, you know, just process this, because the idea that came into my head was, do farmed animals have dreams? So are pigs, you know, in slaughterhouses and in factory farms, are they having dreams when they sleep? Are cows and chickens, are they dreaming? Because for me, it would be more amazing if they weren't. You know, it's, I if I had to guess, if I was a betting man, I would put my money on the fact that, yeah, they definitely are having dreams. And so the question is that I was having, like, what is the content of these dreams? Because when our little dog Faye is dreaming, she's off there, you know, I'm imagining that she's reliving some walk that she went on, right? Maybe she's barking at a squirrel or something. And maybe I'm wrong about dream theory, but I think part of what dreams are is rehashing of information that you've already been exposed to. So like, for example, if she is dreaming about going on a walk, it's only because she's been on walks and because she's seen squirrels that she's having these dreams. You know, if we were to isolate an individual just in a completely, an environment devoid of stimulus, what would their dreams be? And so then I have this question, and Jackie is addressing this right now. So Gorick, first, you're saying, yeah, they have dreams, 100%. I agree. And why wouldn't farmed animals have dreams? Probably nightmares. And I think, unfortunately, that's my guess, is that they're having more nightmares than they are dreams. Like, what? So when we take these human beings, we've all heard of the human who was raised by wolves, you know, and then they came back into human society and they weren't able to really integrate or communicate in the best possible way. So what we're exposed to as we're growing and learning at a very young age can really help define what our experience is going to be through our whole lives. That's why they say early childhood education in humans is so darn important, because we need to set them on a good foundation. Now, these farmed animals that we have, that's not really a consideration for anybody, is like, are they having a positive experience as they're young? I mean, if farmers are worried about their animals having a positive experience, the vast majority of the time, that only is to align the interests with their business. So it's like, if it's easier to handle a cow who's having a good morning, then they're going to make it so the cows have a good morning. But if it doesn't have any difference on whether or not business is going to be going, then oftentimes that's not going to be a question the farmers have. So unfortunately, it seems like there's probably a lot of animals out there having really terrible nightmares and dreams. And as a vegan person, it's like, you know, maybe I'm not the only one, but you have this impulse to save these animals. You want to save them. You want to make their experience so it's not this hell on earth. And just like how when my dog is having a nightmare and I'm stressed because she's stressed and I want to wake her up and make her experience better, just even considering the idea that there's billions of animals having these nightmares out there makes me even more angry about this whole thing and wanting to end it and help them out. And so here we have Gorick is talking a little more about, and I love this, they dream about fear, pain, and suffering. In some cases, I can imagine even positive dreams of love, warmth, and safety. I think also, Gorick, you're right about that. And I guess the question is, like, you know, I have a pretty comfortable life, you know, in terms of I'm not living in a war zone. I have a house. I have a partner. I have all my physical needs are taken care of. And, you know, we live in a scary world, but ultimately I'm okay, right? And even me, I have these nightmares, you know? So when we are having our dreaming life, you know, maybe, and you're right, Gorick, maybe that is a place where they can actually sort of be free and have those feelings of warmth and safety and love. I would hope so. You know, that's actually my sincere hope. Gorick, again, a hen in the back of the shed, for example, dreams of having enough food and water because she can't get to the feeder and is starving in reality. Exactly. We dream of these things that we want sometimes, you know. There's the old trope of the cartoon character who's, you know, eating the big food in their dreams. That's just a thought that I had, and I wanted to share it with the VFFs because I think it's an important question to consider is, do farmed animals dream? If they do, what are these dreams? Is it important for us to have a consideration of that? I think it is. I think as vegan people, the subjective experience of these individuals is a big part of what drives our activism. I want to share something else before we bring Scott on. They're going to be coming on in just a moment. Looks like they're ready to be joining us pretty soon. But I was generating some images last night for AI for Animals, which is an account that I run on Instagram, AI, the number 4 animals. And what my idea was is like, why don't we show these animals as kings and queens, these regal beings, right? And let me show you some of the output that I was able to get last night, because it was kind of nice. So I was like, first I started with a rooster in a tuxedo. And the thing is with this is like, we think of these animals as, okay. So with AI for Animals, what I try to do is put interesting juxtapositions so we can consider animals differently. So we have a queen, maybe a princess who's a rooster here. We have a king pig, and we have a queen pig. Now, when I got to cows, it was like, what's happening with the cows here? Because I don't know if you noticed, it might be hard to see, but we've got a regal king cow here. And then inside of his ears, he's got ear tags. So I said to the AI, I said, hey, isn't it ironic or isn't it interesting that even when I'm asking you to show the king of the cows, the leader of the cows, that this exploitation of these animals is so ingrained in our society that even when I ask you to show the king of the cows, we are still seeing an image of a cow that is tagged with exploitation. And that's what those ear tags are for. It's so we can more accurately identify them so we can, you know, then kill them and eat them, which is terrible. And the AI agreed with me. It said, yeah, you know what? That actually is kind of messed up. And that's what I love about talking with AI is they're very quick to say, yeah, you're right. That's kind of messed up. Now, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, non-binary vegan siblings from all over the world, please welcome to our stage, Scott Redden.
Wow. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you great.
Wow. Hey, everyone. Hi, Jess.
Hi. Welcome to the show.
This is really cool. I am shocked at how seamless the tech is on this. Obviously, you've been doing it for a while, but this is great. It looks great. It's all running smoothly. How's your morning going?
It's going great. I'm actually guest hosting the show this week. Usually we have a different host, Skyjack Morgan, and he works for PETA, and he's actually taking a truck across the country this week, so he's unable to do his morning pre-shift. So I've been really blessed and excited that he's invited me to be the host of this week, and we're using an app called StreamYard for anybody who might want to do their own stream. StreamYard, it is very seamless, and the tech is pretty great.
Yeah, that's very cool. Yeah, I'm over here. I just brought my friend Bella out so she can go number two. You know, it's the morning. This is a morning show, so morning things happen.
It's very important. If you don't take care of that now, it's going to happen either way, I'm sure.
That's how it works. It's my responsibility. Is it okay if I introduce my friend?
Yeah.
To everybody. Hey, Bella. Yeah. Bella, I want you to say hi to Jess and the... Here, let me get those eye boogers first. Here we go.
Oh, what a sweet face.
Hi.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you for that. You paid the dog tax, the pup tax.
Yep. It's my heart and soul right there, folks. Bella.
Thank
you so much for having me, Jess. Thank you for thinking of me. I'm so glad we're getting to, I think this is our first time actually, meeting and chatting, in real time, as opposed to just trading DMs.
Exactly.
So I was very, very honored, especially to be invited on, the day after, yesterday.
Yeah, that's a good way to label it. Yesterday. Let's just call it yesterday. Because it is such a minefield, you know. I'm sure it sounds like you are Native American. It sounds like you were born in America, is what I'm trying to say.
And so right.
That was an accident. That just came out. But what I mean is you culturally grew up with this holiday.
Yeah, I really did. I think the power of social programming, I mean the audience here is predominantly vegans, right? So
this is pretty much everybody's vegan here.
I think we all get it, you know. Social programming is something that I think evolved naturally from baseline survival instincts, right? It's like we're in the jungle and a predator might kill us. Let's socially program each other to survive in this jungle. And extrapolating that sort of origin across hundreds and thousands of years of society, we've gotten to this very interesting place where those with money and power over generations can completely rewrite history and establish standards that benefit them on the macro level, while individual voices and perspectives of pain and suffering are kind of silenced, right? So I mean, we see that with animals, we see it with indigenous people, we see it with different groups. And forgive me, I just have to tie off this Bella's
No worries. Yeah, tying Bella's, is perhaps
Bella's, stuff. Yeah.
It's pretty conscientious to tie the bag. You know, who doesn't tie a bag?
But anyway, I think I was raised, you know, I was raised to, you know, buy into the whole thing, you know, like this is our country. It was God's plan, quote unquote, that this was going to be our country. Even the phrase manifest destiny was something like to be proud of, which is just absurd.
That was the official like line. That's what they were trying to do. The manifest, and for people who don't know, manifest destiny is the idea that we had to like Christianize the savages here in the United States, the native population. And that was like that was the plan. That was the government's plan. They thought they were doing a good thing.
Correct. Yeah. So, you know, you got all of that stuff sort of baked into this, I guess I'll use the word holiday loosely here. I mean, federally, it's recognized as a holiday. You know, I can park my car here in Los Angeles on any side of the street without repercussions. So I guess that like I celebrate that part of the holiday.
Yeah. Yeah.
but yeah, the rest of it is really hard for me. And I don't know about you, Jess. You may have a broader and maybe more engaged like vegan friend community, but I am usually the only vegan around my day-to-day life. And it gets really, really taxing, and the emotional toll that I think the point of view of a vegan takes on a vegan throughout the year is sort of compounded and maximized on yesterday's holiday, right? Because like Christmas and Hanukkah and New Year's and Valentine's Day, all these other holidays are either very specific or very broad. I think Christmas has become very broad and just kind of consumerist, and it's still kind of gross in my opinion. But all the other holidays are pretty like specific and you know, maybe benign even. But this holiday yesterday is so specific about like we are celebrating eating someone to the point where we will put their entire body on the table in the center of the table. And that is so specific and so emotionally disruptive for me. Yesterday, I woke up angry and sad and very disconnected and very stressed out. I was really easily triggered throughout the day. And I knew that I had to go to this gathering in the evening that was not going to be a vegan gathering, that my friends who I love and they love me, you know, we're just going to be doing their thing. And my friends are great. My friends are amazing people. And they really did go to greater lengths than I really expected. And I am very thankful of that. They made a vegan stuffing. They used vegan rolls for the bread, and they bought vegan butter. And I brought my, so I made this vegan green bean casserole that is like hands down the best green bean casserole I've ever had in my life. Like, it was amazing.
Minimalist baker?
You know what? I don't know. I can't, I would, if I wasn't on TV with you, if I wasn't on TV on the internet with you right now, I would pull it up and look.
Because I think I made the same one. I just Googled vegan green bean casserole and it came up. Anyway, it is an excellent.
Where are you from, Jess? Did you grow up? Because you're in LA now.
Yeah.
Right?
I live sort of near the Grove here in LA, but I've been here for about 20 years and I grew up in the East Coast in Massachusetts.
Okay, yeah. So I think, I mean, depending on like what your background is, you grow up with these very specific dishes. And for me, growing up in Michigan, green bean casserole was like, it was always my favorite. It was hands down always my favorite part of any holiday gathering. Because it's just ridiculous. It's like the most Midwestern thing you can think of. It's like, let's take one vegetable, make sure it's the smallest, skinniest vegetable, and mix. Sorry, everybody. I'm sorry.
Hey, that's
There's
okay.
An ambulance.
Someone's getting saved.
Hopefully. We'll just pause.
Hey, that's okay. Okay, that's what happens. You know, it's a live show, folks. Bella's on the case.
So yeah, it's pretty much the most Midwest thing you can do. Let's take a vegetable, make sure it's really tiny and thin, and cover it with fried onions and fat and salt. And let's take this thing that could be healthy and just make it completely decadent. So yeah, I ended up doing a lot of spiritual work to just cope with yesterday and to have an open heart and mind, because it's I don't know, it's really wild, because it's like, we know in the background of our head we know that all this suffering is happening and the world just goes on as if it's not, right? Yeah. even to the point where they're taking the product of that suffering, like the hamburger ads and the you know, chicken tenders ads, and like all the ads for fast food are just sort of like reinforcing this idea that you know, all of this is normal while keeping the suffering completely hidden. It can be really numbing and exhausting, like from the day to day, which I think is why a lot of people, I don't want to say ignore it, but they really kind of vegan people, we compartmentalize a lot of that just so we can cope and try to focus on what we can actually control, which is usually nothing or something very small. But we find peace in that. And then, and for me, you know, I'm losing myself in my work most days, but then on a federal holiday, you know, you have the day off, you have so much more time. And the reality of the specificity of the suffering and the scale of it and the way that is ingrained in our society, it just all kind of culminates in one day. But I made it. I made it through, and now I'm talking to you, which is, I mean, yes. I don't think it's a mistake. So I'm very happy.
You know, something that really bugs me about this holiday, and I didn't realize until this year, is when people say Happy Turkey Day. Because when a vegan says that to me, I can hear that with an open heart, because I understand what is meant. You know, it's like, and I did say that to my, we had a vegan Thanksgiving yesterday, Happy Turkey Day, because what we do is we're celebrating these animals. But when a carnist person says it, they're not saying it with the same heart that we are. They're actually planning on murdering a turkey today and eating it. So I wanted to ask you, because it's, you know, you're in Los Angeles, you're in the comedy world. I've also been in the comedy world in Los Angeles, and I found it really, because comedians are some of the most intelligent people I know. They're some of the most forward-thinking, creative minds out there. And so I was doubly disappointed that the people in my comedy community weren't more forward-thinking on this particular issue. Is that an experience that you also had?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I should also say, as a person also in recovery, and as a person who is, I guess, what you would call gender diverse or gender expansive, the sort of duality or multitude within my day-to-day life, it's dynamic. It's a dynamic existence. You know, everywhere I turn, there's, you know, a bathroom with a label on it that I don't identify with that I have to use every day. There are, you know, people living their lives in a very unconscious way, just left and right. And I think people as individuals, when they do find their power, they are able to elevate their life and they're able to engage in a conscious way. But and this is including a lot of people I love, they don't have the time or the energy to make that space to elevate their life and expand their consciousness. And this is attributed, I think, to, you know, myriad causes, one being capitalism and how we are all sort of commodified, as opposed to being individuals who can operate in a community to thrive as a community and as individuals. We are all sort of stripped down to how many hours in a week we can work and how much money we can make and how much product we can produce and sell. So when you're in that system, it's really hard to find. Oh, hi, friend. That's a very pretty dog too. When you are sort of stuck in that system, I think it's really hard to expand your consciousness. And the comedy scene is no different. And I think also a lot of times in the comedy scene and in the arts in general, whether you're a songwriter or an actor or a painter or whatever, oftentimes you're not doing the thing you want to do full time. You're still an emerging artist. You're still trying to figure it out. And people in the growth phases of their life or the discovery phases of their life, they may be intelligent. They may be very, very intelligent. And I think comedians and the sort of point of view most comedians have is very discerning and interested and engaged, but intelligence does not always correlate directly to open-mindedness or open-heartedness, because that social programming factor is still a big part of it. And especially with comics, I would say predominantly comics, at the end of the day, they want validation, and they will go against the grain to the degree that it will get them a laugh. But at the end of the day, they are going to sort of, except for the very prolific and I would say relevant standout artists, those more established who have found their voice, who are really actually saying something as opposed to just going for the laugh, they're still going to sort of lower themselves to a more common denominator when they can to get the laugh. Let me give you an example. My business partner and I started a comedy show called Comedy for the Animals. It's a vegan-powered comedy show. Our company is called It's Just Comedy, and we produce stand-up comedy shows that are not Comedy for the Animals, but Comedy for the Animals was the first show we produced. And the reason why I went to my partner and said, I really want to do this, will you support me? Because my business partner is not vegan. But I would not call him a carnist though. He's very much like, I don't know how to describe it. It's hard for me to impose a binary on people. Like I'm as vegan as they come. I am an animal rights activist, and I can't endorse eating animals or animal products or using anything that comes from an animal for any reason. I can't support it or endorse it in any way. But my business partner, Michael, he is, I would say, probably 80 to 90% plant-based. And that's just, you know, it's just better, you know, it's better to be 80% plant-based than 10% plant-based. And that's just how I have to look at it. So the reason that we started this show, Comedy for the Animals, all started with a comic named Gabriel Iglesias. Have you heard of this comic?
Yeah.
So he goes by this moniker, Fluffy, which I think is very creative. It's very interesting. It's very body positive, for all different types of body shapes. He, as a larger person, he refers to himself as Fluffy. I'm not fat, I'm Fluffy. And I always thought that was really cute. And he's put out maybe three or four comedy specials. But his most recent special was called Stadium Fluffy. And Netflix put this special out. And as you know, when you're on the Netflix menu, it's sort of like autoplays the trailer for whatever whatever content your scrolling has stopped on. And I opened my Netflix and it started playing the trailer for Stadium Fluffy. And for a stand-up comedy special, the trailer is usually just one joke that's cut out of the special to sort of show you what you can expect. And this was the joke. Gabriel Iglesias in front of a stadium of people, at least 20, 30,000 people, maybe more, tells this joke. He says, "I don't like to talk about politics in my comedy because that brings, that drives people apart. I don't like to talk about religion in my comedy because that drives people apart. I talk about food in my comedy because that brings people together. Unless you're vegan." And then everyone in the stadium laughs. And then he says, "And if you are, you can get the fuck out of here." And the entire stadium starts cheering, just losing it. And I was so triggered. Because number one, I'm a comic and that's not a punchline.
No, it's not.
I was offended as a comic first. I was like, wait a second. I'm like looking at the joke on paper. If I wrote it down on paper, you get to the, "And if you are, you can get the fuck out," is not a punchline.
That's like, you know, I could imagine him saying that about like Nazis and everybody being like, "Yeah, fuck the Nazis." But we're, you know, and I'm sure you've seen these studies they've done in terms of public opinion, like vegans are like way down there with like child molesters in terms of how the public perceives us.
Right. So it's the absurdity of that and the, the just unconscionable negligence, right, that's involved there is so, it was so absurd to me that I was offended as a comic by the fact that that was not a punchline, it was not a joke, and now that is on Netflix, and how many millions of dollars was he paid to tell that quote-unquote joke?
Not only is that on Netflix, that's the promotional joke they're showing. That's the little bit they decided to show.
Exactly. And they're showing it to me. Like, I thought you tech companies were supposed to know who we are and what we're all about. Like, why are you showing that to me? Are you insane? Then I was very offended as an animal rights activist and as a vegan because, like, okay, so what you're telling me is compassion is something that we should be making fun of. Like, this is what we're modeling for young adults and children, that being compassionate is stupid. And like, you should fuck off if you're, I don't even know if we're allowed to curse on this show.
So yeah, we can.
Because I think I've dropped three F-bombs already. But long story short, I had this thing on my heart almost immediately of like, I need to do a comedy show where I can fill a room with vegans and all the comics will be vegan and there won't be any of this. Like I almost immediately put myself in the shoes of like a young vegan in that stadium and how their whole body must have just felt so disgusting. Just like, maybe not fear necessarily, but just abandonment, just like a deep, deep loneliness and despair of being surrounded by 20, 30, 40, 50,000 people just cheering at the fact that you should get the fuck out. Like, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
So so I just thought like, okay, if there's one person at that show who never wants to see a comedy show again because they don't know if they're going to be singled out like that. You know, like, look, if you're a bartender and the comic is telling a joke about a bartender, you know, that's one thing. Like, maybe you really love being a bartender, but I don't think it's going to affect you on the same level as like being a person who is choosing to go against the grain of society at large and have compassion every time they pick up a fork or a spoon or some chopsticks. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, in the UK, it's actually legally enshrined that you can't discriminate against vegan people. You know, it's similar to how we treat religions here. Veganism is protected over there. And it would be, imagine if Gabriel Iglesias made that joke, but he said, well, everybody who's, you know, XYZ religion, get the fuck out. You know what I mean? You know, if he said Jewish people, get out, you know, obviously that would be something that's just abhorrent. But suddenly with veganism, which I actually consider to be a more logically sound philosophy than a lot of these religions. And, you know, I think a lot of vegans don't even choose to be vegan. It's just kind of like, well, I just am who I am because of the values I have. And I live in a world that's making me be vegan. You know, I don't even want that to be a distinction. But anyway, yeah, what you're saying really resonates with me, especially in the comedy context. I had a good friend who went up in the Comedy Store and made a joke about me. She didn't say my name, but she said, well, I have a friend who's a vegan. Boo, half the crowd. She's like, yeah, I know, fuck vegans. And I'm like, you're my friend and you're making a joke about me. Anyway, it's
I have some theories about this, and I'll get into that in just a second, because I don't want to stop or I don't want to miss something that you said that was very subtle. I'm not sure if people picked up on that. I tell this to people all the time, that I did not choose to be vegan. I did not know how common or uncommon that occurrence was. And it's sounding like you're similar. I had like a full blown spiritual awakening that completely shifted the course of my entire life. I did not choose it. I did not ask for it to happen. I never in a million years, like, thought that I would be where I am or who I am today. And especially, I mean, between you and me, especially vegan, like, that's like, what?
Yeah. Never. Like, I went through 30 years of life before I became vegan.
Same. I think it was like exactly 30. So, 29 or 30 or something like that. Shout out to, Janet Martinez at the Humane League, and several other people who, you know, I had this spiritual awakening and I ended up, you know, not eating animals. I was still eating dairy products and eggs and stuff like that. But I had this like spiritual awakening, and I, it took me a whole month. It took me a whole month to realize, wait a second, when was the last time I ate chicken? Or, and then I thought about it. I was like, wait, I haven't. And then I traced it all back to this like spiritual awakening that I had. And I was like, holy crap, am I a vegetarian now? This is fucking weird. And then I was hanging out with Janet, and you know, she's a vegan. She's the field director for the Humane League here in Los Angeles. And I was like, I mean, the chickens are just leaving the eggs on the ground, right? Like, what's the big deal with that? And then she explained to me how it all worked. And I was like, oh, that's bad. I don't want to do that. and it was literally just one conversation. And then I was vegan. Like, it wasn't, I didn't even make a choice. Like, it was just, this is who I am now. But, now let's get back to the sort of vitriol that we face, right? It is on some level a systemic oppression, honestly, of vegans. It is a reinforced, discrimination, there's belittling, there is, I don't know if abuse is the right word, but it's like, we're not far from abuse. I mean,
it's a dystopia, and there is discrimination that actually happens, but it's like, okay, discrimination
in their view. I've been thinking about this a lot lately. Like, why people are so triggered by vegans and why they are so intent to belittle them, make fun of them, you know, all of these things. And I think it comes down to something actually kind of beautiful in the end. I am starting to believe that inside every single person, there is a vegan that is trapped. Every single person.
Yeah.
I believe that if children in middle school were sent to a factory farm instead of a zoo, every adult in every country would be vegan. I think that it is circumstantial and environmental, the reasons why people eat animals. It is not, I mean, you look at the shape of our teeth, the way that we evolved as a bipedal animal, like we were gatherers of nuts and berries. We were foragers. We were not carnivores from our origin. And, you know, you can say what you will about brain development in certain periods of human history and how that's linked to eating animal flesh and whatever. But the fact of the matter is it's 2023 and we're all good, y'all. Like we got, just go watch Game Changers. Like we're fine. We don't need to eat animals anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. Something I wanted to ask you, because I've dealt with this, you know, in the comedy world, I felt something, and maybe this is not a valid thing to feel, but I felt like if I'm taking such a strong stand about this, like my friends know that I'm vegan, it felt like a certain level of disrespect that they didn't take it more seriously. It felt like a certain level of marginalization, and like they were pointing at me as like, oh, you're the one who's just crazy and bad and wrong. Did you have any sort of similar feeling? And if you did, how do you balance being able to feel like these people are still taking you seriously as a person?
Sure, sure. So as an individual, there's a lot of work that I have to do to not be a piece of shit. Especially as a person, yeah, in recovery. And this is something that I say in, you know, the secret society meetings we have, that the first drug I was exposed to was not alcohol or marijuana or cocaine. The first drug I was exposed to in my household was superiority. We believe this, so we are better than the people that believe other things. We vote for this political party, so we are better than the people that vote for the other political party. That was the first drug I was exposed to from my family. So that is the drug that I have to be most conscious of in my day-to-day life. And I, Jess, am sort of a community builder naturally. I'm the oldest of six siblings. We were homeschooled, and I did end up going to public school, but this is all just to say that creating a system to manage a community is something that is like in my DNA. So I very often end up, now that I'm older and wiser, I end up more reluctantly in leadership positions. So our comedy production company, since May, we've produced 42 comedy shows. Airplane. There it is.
That's LA life.
I live pretty close to the Burbank airport. So we also host a weekly open mic. And we have Jolly Ranchers and we give them away for free. And Jolly Ranchers are vegan. You know what I mean? So like I am in the position of, and I don't want to say position of power because it's like, okay, we got 20 comedians and that one's in charge. Like, is that really power?
They're herding cats. Cat who's in charge.
Exactly. Exactly. Excuse me while I lick myself. What were we doing? So, that's a very apt analogy. So basically, I created Comedy for the Animals to have that safe space for vegans and not just for vegan, audience members, but also for vegan performers as well. And we've only done two of those shows, because we sort of found a home with Dynasty Typewriter. Dynasty Typewriter veganized their entire concession stand for us. They removed any of their regular concessions that they would sell for any other show that contained any animal products, including honey and butter and all that stuff. So Big shout out to Misty and the whole team at Dynasty Typewriter. They're amazing. And maybe I should walk down a different street. So to answer your question, I guess, and this is still something I'm working on, is I have no problem telling a comic or someone in the audience to fuck off. I have to manage my own sense of superiority in any given context. And I put that at the top of my list of priorities, that I am no better than anyone else, except when it comes to being vegan. I'm sorry, I am better than you. It is better.
It's a difficult thing. I feel similarly.
Being like, vegan is better. I'm sorry. Like, it's like I'm choosing compassion and love, and it's better for the environment. It's better for my health. It's better. I'm sorry. It is. And if you're
not just your, it's better for everybody else's health.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not saying I'm a better person intrinsically. I'm saying that I have embraced the inner vegan within me, and you haven't. So you have just as much capacity for compassion and self-improvement that I have. It's just you haven't tapped into it yet for whatever reason. And because I myself didn't consciously choose to be vegan, I didn't like open up my diary one day and say, today I chose to be vegan. It was quite the opposite. Because that is the context in which I have to view my own vegan journey, that forces me to have compassion for those people who have not yet connected with their inner vegan. Because if they're like me, they can't just consciously choose to be vegan either. They may have to go through the same spiritual awakening or one similar to mine to get to where they need to be to embrace that part of themselves.
So is the, I wanted to ask you more about your comedy show, because I think it's wonderful and it's very unique. I've never heard anything like this before. And I really wanted to go to your last one with Tig, but I was working that day. But anyway, can you tell us a little bit about that show? Like, how do you find the vegan comedians to do this show? Because not everybody's going to put "I'm a vegan person" in their profile.
You know, that's a very, very good point, especially in comedy. Yeah, it's just sort of like this. I mean, it's showbiz, baby. Like, there's levels to this shit. There's definitely a vegan Illuminati. You know what I mean? And there's levels to it, right? Like, you got Joaquin Phoenix and Billie Eilish and Moby at the top. They're in the top tier, right? They're in the top tier with Tabitha Brown and Chris Paul and all of those folks, right? The like the A-list celebrity vegans. But then you have this like second tier who are like the executive directors of all the nonprofits, people like you, people like Bobby Sudd, people like Janet.
I'm in the second tier, dude. Thank you. I feel very important.
I'm gonna go ahead and put myself in that second tier as well. We are innovators doing things for the community in a proactive way, because I'm sure you've been to a pig vigil or a chicken vigil, and I also have a friend who works at PETA who at one point like said, hey, if you wanted a job at PETA, I could probably get you a job at PETA. After going to a vigil and being like sort of kind of offered a job at PETA, I very quickly realized I cannot participate in activism that intimately. I am insanely sensitive. The first vigil that I went to, as soon as I saw the truck, I started shaking and sobbing uncontrollably. I could not physically put my body through that trauma, because I think I still had a lot of shame around the choices I had made, even though they were like programmed into me. I still made those choices, and it still took me that 30 years to sort of wake up. So Comedy for the Animals really sprouted from that sort of very specific story that I told earlier about Gabriel Iglesias, but once I sort of settled into it and we produced our first show, And then we ended up producing our second show with Tig Notaro as the headliner. I really realized this is my activism. This is what I can do for the community. This is what I can do for the animals. I can't go to all the vigils. I can't work at PETA and look at those photos and videos every day. I can't do that. I don't have the capacity. But what I can do is create an environment where the people who do have that capacity can come and recharge. They can come and let go. They can come and laugh, because crying and laughing are spiritual acts. They are things that our bodies do naturally to release trauma and to embrace healing. When we cry, when we laugh, we are engaging with a subconscious, like, divine power, I think. And creating a space where vegans and non-vegans can come together and have a good time, especially through laughter, is that's the form of activism that I have the capacity to engage with and to empower other people to do. And to finally get back to and answer your question, I just kind of put the word out. I just put feelers out. It took me several months to build up the list of comics that I have now who are vegan. But we've had incredible performers. April O'Neil and Ash T were our openers for the Mike Kaplan show. If y'all haven't heard of Mike Kaplan, he spells his name M-Y-Q. Mike Kaplan, he is, in no uncertain terms, a comedic genius. He has a master's degree, I believe, in linguistics. And the style of his comedy is so smart and so funny and also silly. I highly, 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 highly recommend checking out all of his work. And we had sort of a scheduling snafu. And that's why that very first Comedy for the Animal show was the attendance was pretty low. I guess we wouldn't say it was a huge success from a business standpoint, albeit it was a huge success from a creative standpoint. But then I think because we did pull off that first show, Tig said yes to do our second show, which we did this year in March. And that show sold out, and we had myself and my business partner, Michael Raley, opened the show and hosted it. We had Peyton McCormick and Stephen Marcus Relliford as comics opening the show. And it was really, really fun. It was really great. And the charity of benefit was a charity called Vegan Outreach. There's basically a... that's sort of another part of the activism component of Comedy for the Animals. Is we let the headliner choose what charity they want to be the charity of benefit. And Tig chose Vegan Outreach. The director of development of Vegan Outreach, a woman named Alex Burry, flew in from Anchorage, Alaska to Los Angeles to see the show. It was so fun. It was really, really cool.
That's great. You know, I'm a puppeteer, I'm an artist, and I do believe that it's through our art that we're going to be able to really make a difference in this world. You know, I think I can go online and go into comment sections and stand out there with signs, and I can make a certain impact doing that. But I think, you know, if you're a comedian, if you're an author, if you are a storyteller in some way, it really is these stories that we tell. And it's only a matter of time before we have like a mainstream feature film with a vegan activist as the protagonist. You know, it could even be something that just it helps people understand what Vistopia feels like and all that. And I think it's gonna happen, and it's gonna be through things like that that we're really gonna start to see bigger societal shifts, just in and how people observe not just their relationship to animals, but also like vegans themselves. I think there is gonna come a time where there's gonna be a reckoning where, you know, society's gonna realize, wait, hang on, the vegans were right this whole time. And there's going to be a bit of like, oh, was I shitting on vegans for 10 years through my comedy? Maybe I should go and, you know, apologize for that. Or I don't know what that's going to look like. But I do feel like in the future, there's going to be a reckoning.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, like any art form, it is a process that involves a lot of discovery. Every individual artist has to find their voice, and not everyone does. And even in the more successful established groups, I don't even know if all of those artists have really found their voice. They may have found success, but what are you really saying? Are you just participating in commerce and you got lucky and you have a position where you can make a good living, and not to mention your attorney and your agent and your manager can make a good living? Or are you really pushing the boundaries? Are you really saying something? I think for me personally, the journey that Marc Maron has been on with becoming vegan is like, he goes out of his way to say, look, this is not an ethical thing. This is not, I'm not vegan for the animals. This is about cholesterol. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I'm just like, I'm looking at Marc and I'm like, you're almost there, buddy.
Almost there.
It's a matter of time.
I didn't know he was doing that. That's great.
He's been vegan for like 9 months, but he did it all for his cholesterol levels. And he talks about his connection with animals, and I'm just like, dude, that vegan trapped inside of you is screaming.
Yeah.
He's been screaming for years and you're still not listening, but that's okay. It's okay. One step at a time, baby steps.
I've been trying to get Bill Burr to go vegan. I just like, I'll send him emails from time to time. I'll be like, listen, you already have the values. Just go ahead and do it. I know that you can, because I like Bill a lot. Do you know Eddie Pepitone? Is he on your radar?
I'm familiar. Yeah, I'm familiar with Eddie Pepitone.
So I would recommend reaching out to him for your show, because he's vegan and he is one of my favorite stand-ups.
Oh, wow. I didn't know he was.
He doesn't talk about it too much, but he is. And he's an ethical vegan. So, yeah.
I will say this. I don't know if I should say this. Let's just say a very predominant comedic singer-songwriter who is very big in the 80s and 90s is a vegan. And when reached out to through his management, declined to participate in our show, because while this person, this is the manager saying, while my client is vegan, he doesn't like to really promote it or put it out there in his work. It's a dynamic thing, you know, and I do think, when Joaquin won the Academy Award and used that time to talk about the suffering of dairy cows specifically, the platform that Billie Eilish has with her, you know, record number of Grammy wins and the amount of fans that she has and the power that comes with that platform, I think that you are right in that the reckoning, I don't know about that word, but I think there will definitely be a mass expansion of ideas and an open-heartedness from people in large groups that, start to realize. There's a lot of fucked up things about capitalism, but one of the benefits is you can look at numbers and you can see trends, and the sheer number of vegan products and the sales of those products and the proliferation of plant-based alternatives and more compassionate food items. And let's take my friend Caitlin Volpe, for example. She has a interior design company in Michigan, and she's the one who designs all of our logos and does all of our artwork assets. And that's not really what she does full time. She just kind of does that because, she loves us and what we are all about. She has created this entire compassionate design program for interior design, you know, to stay away from wool and leather and all of that kind of stuff, right? So we're seeing it across all different types of industries, this expansion of And a lot of times it comes down to sustainability. But hey, if it takes you going to sustainability first to get to compassion, that's fine. You know what I mean? Yeah. Whatever route you have to take to get to compassion, let's do it.
Yeah, whether it's for your health, sustainability. So we're nearing the end of our time today, Scott. I really appreciated your time and your thoughts and your perspective. It's really, really wonderful to have you here. And I'd like to extend an open invitation anytime you want to come back on the show. We do a pre-shift almost every morning. And if you want to promote your show or if you just want to come on and hang, on Sundays we do this thing called the Vegan Sunday School, where it really just is open. So anybody who wants to come in, usually there's three or four of us kind of just talking and hanging out. The reason Sky created this channel was for a safe space for vegans to come and really feel like we can, you know, just talk about our own stuff and be comfortable here in a vegan safe space. So you're welcome. And we really certainly appreciate you. And I'd love to, you know, talk off the air about more comedy and potentially even
getting something
together to work together. Yeah.
That's great. And I want to just take a second to say how amazing your work is. I was just on your Instagram and looking at the stuff for Kindness Town.
Kindness Town, yeah.
That looks so cool. I mean, I don't think anyone of our age, you know, would be who we are without puppets. There's something about a puppet that, it's sort of magic, right? I don't know if there was ever a better sort of distillation of what show business is. It's creating something out of nothing, and it is creating something that is 100% an illusion, but is also 100% human at the same time. And that is really, really hard to do. But as soon as you get a puppet involved, it's almost like a hack. And I don't mean like a hack in like,
oh, yeah,
that
no,
joke
yeah.
is hack, but it's like you sort of, it's a way to kind of hack the system. It can go directly into someone's heart, I think. Did I just lose my AirPods? Can you hear me still?
I can hear you. Yeah.
Okay, great. Anyway. So I just want to, if anyone's watching this and doesn't know about Kindness Town, check out that. I'm very excited to see where you go with that. And yeah, Comedy for the Animals. We're on Instagram. We don't know when our next show is going to be, but we'll definitely come back to talk about that. And yeah, if you're in LA and you're vegan, definitely hit me up. I'm always down to, you know, meet some vegans.
All right. Well, we do vegan get togethers around here. So you certainly will be getting an invitation to one of those soon. And Scott, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
All right. See you soon. Thank you. Y'all, that was very special. I'm so excited that Scott came on. I love, you know, something about me is I was very much into the comedy world here in LA, and I was a professional improviser for years with the Henson Company. And, you know, comedians, it's a very special thing to be a comedian, and it's very rare. I don't know any other real comedy people who are also a vegan person. So that's really exciting. Now we do have to get out of here pretty soon. Sky, unfortunately, he's driving today, so he's not going to be able to be with us. I've been ending our show each week with, or each day this week with a little bit from our friend Chris over in the UK, Sweet Goose, who, by the way, if you don't know Sweet Goose, go and listen to Sweet Goose. He's a very, very special musician who also talks just about vegan animal rights stuff. And the song that I'd like to share today is something about the Nishinmaru, which is a whaling ship. And so we're going to listen to Chris here sing about from the first person perspective of a whale and what's going to happen to this whaling ship. So let's all put our listening ears on and give Chris a listen here. Oh, shoot.
When mother she was taken with a harpoon in her back, she went to the southern seas with a storm that won't prevent. To the waves within these waters drags you down into the depths. So if you want, if you go whaling now out on the open shore, we will take back every whaling ship until whaling is no more. People, watch you go down to the belly of the ocean. We'll sing and cheer as it disappears when we sing the Nishinmaru.
Oh, Okay, vegan ears. So I want you to go out there. I want you to listen to some Sweet Goose today. I want you to go out and make the world a better place. And, you know, thank you for joining us here today. If y'all have any questions, feel free to come and ask. I see that there's been a lot of talk in the chat about the, and I want to address this. So Megan, you were saying, I thought vegans were about not objectifying the bodies of sentient beings. I don't see consistency here. I see that you're having questions about the thumbnails that are being used for this channel. You got to talk to Sky about that. It's a branding thing. I believe he does want to stay consistent with the blue rabbits, and he does have, you know, women dressed in a sexy way for that. You can ask Sky about that and why he's chosen that for his branding. And if you have any thoughts or feelings about that, thank you for bringing them up. Everybody else, I do want to say thank you so much for being here with us today for our show. And I'm going to get out of here, but we'll see you next time. I will be back on Monday morning. And thanks again. Let me put this brand banner on. We are going to show the end of the show. And here we
go. It's so hard to not abuse animals.
Who's
this panel for?
Go fuck themselves.
This is a shout out for vegans.
Thank you again, everybody. I hope you have a great weekend.
This is a shout out for vegans.
Go back. Watch some of our old shows. We got a lot of stuff online. Thank you again, vegan ears. We love you, and we're so happy that you decided to spend your morning with us. And we'll catch you next time. All right. Have a great weekend.